nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Oh, yes, indeed. All systems are nominal. I'm your host, Captain DJ Mave. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Maybe you're streaming it from KYRS.org. But regardless, if you're listening to us right now, you're hearing us right now. This is a scientific fact. But you're listening to Out and About, and you know, every show we talk, it's just a little bit something different. And this show, we kind of did a little teaser 2 weeks ago with my friend Pam Kingsley talking about being a playwright, et cetera, all that stuff. Oh, by the way, what kind of play have you been writing lately? Oh, Minister of Sorrow. Well, maybe we should have everybody in to talk about that. And by golly, we have just about everybody in here to talk about it. Just about, where's the horse, you guys? What happened to the horse?
Well, there was a big kerfuffle downstairs in the library, and the poop patrol fell derelict. It was, sorry.
Okay, good. I heard the thing down there, and I heard the kerfuffle. But I just was hoping that nobody had said that when you asked the horse to come, he said nay.
Oh, no.
Hey, why don't we just go around and introduce ourselves? We've got the director, we've got the star of the show, we've got the lighting designer, who also wears a bunch of different hats. Alana is also the artistic director and then the managing director of Stage Left Theater, brand new. And Alana, I think this is like your first full-blown show, right? I mean,
it's true. Yes, we did Macbeth. Last show.
You know what? I think that mic is the hot one for some reason.
Let's try this one.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
So, yeah. The last production, Macbeth, was, and I can say it in here, I think. This is a curse-free zone, right?
Yeah, you can't say curse words. I mean, you can say them, but then I have to run over and push a button.
Okay, but as far as like the curse of the Scottish play.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now you can say that.
Okay. Yeah. That was a handoff show between myself and Jeremy Whittington.
Okay.
And this is my first all me as managing artistic director production.
Well, congratulations. And so why don't we, means you're talking, we're just going to go reverse. And so we're going to go counterclockwise from where I'm sitting. I think it may be from where you're sitting as well, unless you're in the Southern Hemisphere. We'll go counterclockwise, and we'll just say what you're doing on this show, and then we'll just, I already introduced you, so you don't need to do that if you don't want to. Your name.
Okay. I'm Alana Shepherd.
Oh, I didn't have to do that, but that's okay.
Fine.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's still true.
It is true.
And I'm also the lighting designer on Minister of Sorrow.
Okay.
And I'm Hazel Bean. I am playing Emma in this one-woman show. So lead by default.
Oh, okay.
she won it fair and square. I'm Sarah Damon, and I'm the director of Minister of Sorrow.
Perfect, perfect. And so what this Minister of Sorrow, what is it about? Does anybody want to kind of give broad brushstrokes what the story's about?
Sure, I can kind of tackle that one first. It is an original work, and I think you teed that up really well, written by local playwright Pam Kingsley, but she's also nationally recognized, so not just local to Spokane. It's a play that won an award for the Appalachian Playwright Festival and has been received that honor as well. It's a one-woman show, And the actress, Hazel Bean, is joined on stage by an onstage musician that is named the Muse. The Muse is not a character. The Muse is there to set the mood and the feeling of the Appalachian Mountains. Think of that character as the mists and the myth and the time period of the 1930s. When Pam was writing this play, she listened to a lot of that folk music of the early like 1930s era. I was really inspired by it. But the story itself is around this character of Emma, who has the wonderful job of being a horseback librarian. And we all have learned a lot about the history of the horseback librarians. Sure. That were initially founded by the Franklin administration with public works funding. And these women, they had their horses and they had a library system where they would take books up into the hollers and highest areas of the Appalachian Hills and deliver books to the people there. And so this play captures not just Emma's story, which is one of her finding her own independence and healing and self-assuredness through the written word and the power of reading and books, but also connecting with her community and learning from the people in her community through delivering books to them as well. So it's very powerful piece of work. We're very happy to do it.
Yeah. What was it hard to find this musician, this muse? I mean, this is a very integral character. How did you go about finding somebody that would not only be able to play an instrument, but kind of fill that void?
We are ridiculously blessed with talent in Spokane. I think there are a number of musicians that could have fit the role, but Joey Quintana, I had worked with him prior and Funny Girl. He had played Nick Arnstein in Spokane Civic Theater's Funny Girl. And I think he was new to the stage at that time. I had happened to assistant direct on that production and got to know him. He's just a wonderful person, great personality, and happens to play the banjo as his primary instrument. So when I was looking for a muse, he was absolutely top of list to ask and see if he'd be interested. He also has other instruments that he brings into the production, but to find a banjo player that's already connected to the theater community was, gosh, we're just really, really lucky.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like you kind of mentioned before, this is the winner of the 2023 Appalachian Playwriting Festival. That production, did you look into how they staged it or anything, or was it just kind of a blank slate for you?
I took it as a blank slate.
Yeah.
I think I saw a couple photos that were part of their promos, and the amazing thing about a new piece of material is there are not recordings on YouTube, there are not reviews, there is nothing that you can really draw from other than the written word and your imagination and what your creative team brings to you.
Right.
So the lighting design that Alana has brought, there's not a standard for it. She has set the standard. You know, the character of Emma, there's been some wonderful actresses, I believe two, one with the, no, three, because this started with the stage left.
Yeah, we did that. I went to Playwrights Laboratory.
And Playwrights Laboratory. Yeah. And so I think maybe you're the fourth woman to play Emma.
So. Yeah.
But that is a really small and exclusive list. So the choices that the production team and the performers are bringing really inform, you know, my vision as well.
Right.
This is a collaborative effort.
Yeah.
So it's been really, really wonderful. Yeah, no, there's no model for it. We get to set that.
That's so cool. And Hazel, so you have an amazing amount of lines that you have to memorize. Was that pretty, because a one-person show, do you play different characters in the thing or just the one, or kind of like talking?
I do. So yeah, I mean, Emma is telling the story. This is very much her story from start to finish. But within that, we do get different vignettes and different characters. And I do speak in, you know, in their voices as well, which is such a fun and fun acting challenge as well during this process. So yeah, we do. I mean, I'm Emma. We get the voice of her husband, Harlan. We get, you know, a young child that she meets in her travels who she's bringing books to, an 80-year-old woman who's lived in the Nob Hill country for years now. And so, yeah, you do get a variety of age and different type of people that you meet along the way, which is so charming to have not only her story, but a real picture of Appalachia and the time and the people who made up that community.
Well, how did you go about kind of discovering the voice for the different characters?
Oh, it was, I mean, thankfully I had Sarah with me the whole way. So it was really just trying things and seeing what stuck, you know, in terms of like taking age and kind of gender into it and experience different regions as well, kind of mostly Appalachia. But I mean, even one sort of Irish accent for our 80-year-old Etta Jean, who's been in the area for a long time, that everything in the script kind of informed it, how bright we needed to go for a youthful voice.
Right.
And not just necessarily like deepening for Harlan and the male voice, but I really do believe that like the body and the voice are so integrated for an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was, yes, experimenting before we got on stage, but I think a lot of it dropped into place when we were actually on stage putting the rehearsals together.
Yeah.
Because you start to work with the physicality and the voice and the body just follow each
other.
Right,
moving around. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's tougher. Well, I guess, do you feel like you interact with the muse a little bit? Is it kind of like set? I mean, because I think it's, I was on a one-person show before, mm-hmm. and I know it's kind of hard because you don't have anybody to like reflect off of,
yeah.
or have kind of as a touchstone, mm-hmm. you know. Are you able to use the muse in that way?
So
or
it's very different because, yes, I would say we're very used to having a scene partner on stage, someone to kind of play mm-hmm. that tennis match of energy with and to bounce things back and forth off of. And this is not that in terms of another presence on stage. We carved out one precious moment where I get to look at Joey as the muse.
And
I hold that moment near and dear because the rest of the time, no. I mean, I feel his presence. He's so wonderful, and what Sarah and Joey have crafted in the music is remarkable in the way that it just supports and uplifts and underscores these moments and fills me with energy and keeps me in the moment. And that is so. I would say yes, I do play off of what he brings to the stage.
Right.
But no, I can't really make eye contact, you know, most of the time, which guts me a little bit. But it really is valuable to the storytelling, which is amazing. So really, the other end of that kind of tennis match is the audience, where
in
this one woman format we're speaking to them directly, and I would imagine that once we have audiences in, I think their energy is going to play a big part of that as well.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose, and then seeing what different reactions each night, it's probably mm-hmm. going to be a different reaction to different parts. It's an amazing amount of dialogue that you had to remember. Did you have a plan for that? How do you do that?
It was a chunk at a time.
Yeah.
You know, carving it up into scenes, into moments. And I mean, we've been working on the memorization for a couple months now.
Yeah.
So really, thankfully, the auditions were set early enough that I've had quite a bit of time to work
really
on it,
which
important. Is so important. So yeah, it's what, about 40 pages of text, and just broke it down little by little. And for me, my process is really boring. I just write it out a million times. I knew that's my process. I have a notebook per show basically. And yeah, just wrote it out until I could get it. My poor husband, was with me every step of the way, helping me run those lines. And Sarah and I checked in pretty much weekly to kind of check on progress. So it was just, a labor of love.
And you do this in an accent, right?
Appalachian accent. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we started to.
So you have
that.
A British accent, if our listeners can't tell, a slight British accent.
Very slight, yeah. I was born in the UK, and I've been in the US for years now, over 20 years, but it comes out every now and then, for sure. But yeah, in this one, I mean, we're taking kind of a hard left turn over to the Appalachian Mountains, and so it's really something we tried to integrate early while learning the lines so that those two things kind of came together. Lots of video references, just listening to different people from the area as much as I could, and trying to just soak it in and apply it.
And when you run lines with your husband, does he do it in an accent as well? Has that caused any problems?
I'd say he's been a bit of a sponge, and he's soaked up some of that accent work with us to the point where, like, it's very fun. There's a moment of the play where it's sort of a fire and brimstone speech, and he repeats a bit back every time. I think it's his favorite line. And so you'll hear me kind of finish off the line, and then you'll just hear an echo of love. And it's always an accent, which I love. But yeah, he's soaked it up, and I mean, he's gone out. I absolutely love this. I fell about laughing when he told me this, but he went to get his hair cut and sat down and was chatting with the gal who was cutting his hair. And she goes, "Oh, where in the South are you from?" And he goes, "No, no, that's my wife's fault. No, Spokane born and raised."
That is so funny. How'd you two meet?
Actually, through my family. So my sister married his best friend.
Okay.
He and his best friend, Max, have been, I think they've been besties since they were about 6 years old. And my sister met Max and fell in love and married him. And then when my husband came back from his second deployment, he started hanging around a lot and we met and it kind of went from there. They were thrilled, of course. They're finally officially brothers.
Oh, that's really yeah. cool. Yeah, that's really cool. Alana, now you have, when you go to do something like this where it's very geographically set, I mean, do you come up with like a color scheme in your mind of like, what is Appalachia? I mean, how do you go about that?
Oh, I do. Absolutely. Yeah. One of the biggest inspirations is that photo that we've been using for promos forever and ever. It's that, you know, those hills receding off into the distance,
right,
with ever lightening shades of blue as it recedes into the horizon. That's sort of like an iconic look for Appalachia. So that's always in the back of my mind. And everything I do is tinged with that sort of like that cool light blueness. But in certain moments, in many moments, I add some warmth into it.
Sure.
But it's informed by that, for sure.
And of course, there will be some interior. I haven't seen the set yet, you know, so I don't really know how. But you and James, I'm sure, coordinate with that. How does that work? Do you kind of, say to you, this is what the set's going to look like, and then you come up with it, the lighting design, or do you kind of talk about it together?
Oh, it's absolutely a back and forth. It's uh-huh. a collaboration. I have some very vague ideas, like mm-hmm. what I just relayed, and we just start talking about specific moments. And I would say the central piece of this set is a church window, and that was very inspirational from a lighting standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you think about light through a church window. That was like, okay, there we go. There yeah. it is.
That's a cool design. And how did you, now I kind of joked around a little bit about a horse, but there is a horse in this. How did you address the horse, or is that a secret for people when they come to see?
I don't know that it has to be a complete secret. We,
okay.
we don't really have a horse on stage, although we were very lucky to visit Pine Drop Ponies and Tanya Ballman Lakewood, Lake Wolf. She invited us out to meet some of her horses there, which is where a lot of our promo photos came from.
Great photos.
Oh, beautiful photos. And, you know, it really brought to life kind of what the feeling of a horse would be, like how big these animals are. And so because we can't have a live horse, of course, on stage, Moss and I started talking early about having a log, because there, you know, there's that
oh, yeah.
the big back of a horse and you know, you have the bark, and it's that same kind of raw,
solid
yeah. feeling. So there is some, we use this log in a way that is, I think between the acting, the lighting, I really believe it's a horse. I do. I get to the end and I'm just like, I truly do. Our imagination runs wild.
Absolutely. our minds just go there. Mm-hmm. And I must say, Moss is James Moss Lansdell, mm-hmm. our scenic designer and technical director.
Yes, and they've done a wonderful job, and it's been really great to work with them too, just from start to finish on it. From the window concept, I think everything built out from there.
Okay, I'm so excited to see this, and you know, we should probably let people know. I got to do our 20-minute business here, but this would probably be a great time to let people know. How do they see the show, and when is it? Where is it? What's going on?
It opens December 6th, this Friday, and runs through December 22nd, Thursdays through Sundays, 7 p.m. on Thursday through Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sundays. You can get your tickets at stageleftheater.org. That's theater with an E-R.
Okay, and you know, before I do my 20-minute after-the-hour stuff, I should also say that today is Giving Tuesday, And you do have a couple of nonprofits right here, right now. You've got Stage Left Theater and you've got KYRS. So, you know, if you're looking for a place to maybe put a little change, to places that make a lot of change, KYRS or Stage Left Theater. And you know, I'm on the board of Stage Left, so I need to say that too. So, all right.
Yes, and we have a shiny new Venmo at Stage Left Theater with an
ER. Okay, we're going to play a little music as I load up things on the computer.
The book of love is long and boring. No one can lift the damn thing. It's full of charts and facts and figures and instructions for dancing. But I love it when you read to me, and you can read me anything. The book of love has music in it. In fact, that's where music comes from. Some of it's just transcendental. Some of it's just really dumb. But I love it when you sing to me, and you can sing me anything. Love is long and boring, and written very long ago. It's full of flowers and heart-shaped boxes and things we're all too young to know. But I love it when you
I'm Cameron Pierce, hailing from Prague Planet. Prague Planet is a diverse new program with a mix of progressive and art rock music. It's ranging from the classic hits to new releases. This exoplanet has been captured in the orbit of a station near to you. Prague Planet, charting the final frontier of progressive rock and roll music. Thursday nights from 10 p.m. to midnight. Right here on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for December 2nd through the 6th. Monday, Ron Green at Mary Hill, open mic with Pest the Menace and Ben 10 at the Red Room, and Public Serpents and Krusty Mustard at the Big Dipper. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, All-Star Jam with Jerry Lee Raines at Zola. Wednesday, the Heather King Duo at Iron Horse in the Valley, the Ronaldos at Barrister, Color Green and Time Worm at the District, Eel Salad at Zola, open mic with Derek Hart at the Checkerboard, and open jam at the Red Room. Thursday, Blues Jam at Chan's Red Dragon, DJ Trizzle, Donnie Schmerda, No Signal, and Goblin and Gremlin at the Red Room, and Vika and the Velvets at Zola. Friday, Ron Green at Arborcrest, Just Plain Darren at the Riddler, The Rub at Zola, Tamarack Ridge Band at the Eagles North, Heat Speak and Betsy Rogue at the Chameleon, Jang the Goon at the Big Dipper, and Inland Beaches at Iron Goat Brewing. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Spokane Central Library presents From the Vault, an archival poetry project. Local poets will share original works inspired by rare and fascinating items housed in the library's special collections and archives known as The Vault. Following the live readings, the poems and their corresponding archival items will be displayed on the third floor of the Central Library, allowing visitors to explore this creative fusion through the end of January. Thursday, December 19th at 4 p.m., Spokane Central Library, 906 West Main Avenue. Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m., Mondays through Saturdays, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m., Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Out and About receives support from KSPS's PBS-TV's Inland Sessions series. Every Monday at 7:30 p.m. on KSPS PBS, Channel 7.1, and streaming at kspS.org. Inland Sessions, episode archive and podcast featuring extended interviews and stripped-down performances available at kspS.org/Inland Sessions. Hey, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, and this is, of course, Out and About, and I'm your host, Captain DJ Maeve, and I'm talking to my friends from Stage Left Theater, and we're talking about the show that they're putting together called Minister of Sour. That'd be a good show. Minister of Sorrow. And some of you might say, oh, that sounds familiar because I talked to Pam Kingsley, the playwright, a couple of shows ago. And Pam and I go back on plays, and also our recent thing we talked about, the Running for My Life video that we put together. So anyway, so that's why you're not going crazy. Well, you may be going crazy. Yes, Minister of Sorrow, we're here talking about it in a different way. But I was kind of curious, when you do have the playwright, does the playwright ever come around and kind of check up on things, or how does that work?
She does. She is welcome anytime she wants to come. I think she came to some early rehearsals. We had some meetings. We had a nice lunch at her home early in the process. And Pam, she's warm and yes. What a hoot. She's just a great personality to be around. I think at some point in the process, there's that transition to where she is wanting to hand it over to a creative team to see right. What they do with her work. And she steps back. I take that as a huge vote of confidence and faith in us, and feel very honored that she doesn't feel like she has to come and check in and make sure we're not running amok with her beautiful script. So she will be there opening night, but I don't think we've seen her for maybe a week or maybe two.
Okay.
So we're really excited to show her all of the hard work that we've put in since the last time we saw her.
And were things pretty locked in? I mean, at this point, or does she go, you know what, I'm just going to change this one little bit here.
I think that the script has been an evolution. We talked about it winning the award at the Appalachian Playwright Festival, right. And then Spokane Playwright Lab was another big push to turn it into the iteration that I received pretty early on when Jeremy Whittington asked me to direct.
Okay.
And then during our process, we had a couple of changes that is so thrilling when you can go back to your playwright and say, hey, we're talking minor things, right? The difference between excellent to transcendent is yes. In my view.
Yeah.
But it's really wonderful to say, hey, what do you think about this paragraph to this paragraph? And she lights up and says, you're right, we should make that change. So there was not many changes really during our process, but we are now working with the locked script. I think the ending is so powerful. The folks that saw it at the lab, they'll get to see a new fresh take on the very,
oh, very
end.
Cool.
So if you've seen it before, you haven't seen it before, you have to come mm-hmm. see it again. It's really, this locked script is just great.
Yeah, the laboratory thing was fun because at the end it was a lot of questions and answers, and a lot of it's, well, why didn't you do this? Or why did you say that? I mean, I would have done this instead, which Pam is so gracious. She listens and nods her head. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, she's, I'm really excited, very excited to see this play. Is it, do you find it, when you're directing, is it harder to direct one person or a whole bunch? Is that, do you kind of go in with different tools in your toolbox, or is it sort of a, you know, just the same kind of process?
You know, I think it's different and the same in that when you're working with a variety of actors that are covering a handful of characters, you have maybe five different people. You have to figure out what are their strengths, what are their insecurities, how do you work with that unique person to get that character from them. Mm-hmm. And each character requires that level of attention to detail. I think working with one actor, there's one relationship, one communication style, one, you know, set of foundational trust to create, but then you get to craft every individual character with that one person. So it is a little simpler when it comes to just how you communicate with your cast, because there's one person that you're, sure. or, and two with Joey too, versus a handful of people that might have different personalities.
Yeah.
But the crafting of the characters and the, I do a lot of book work when I'm directing. I like to look at the history, the environment. What does this world feel like? What are the themes of the show? And how does each individual character bring out a part of that theme to the overall narrative and contribute to that? So a lot of the book work and approaching the script itself is very much the same. It's it's similar and different, I suppose. Simpler okay. and sometimes more complex, because Hazel obviously has to do a lot more work.
And I was going to say, Hazel, the spotlight's on you. Is that hard for you, or is that, how does that...
I mean, I think, like Sarah said, it's almost different. It's different, yeah. And it's the same on this side of the, you know, the experience as well as the actor. Yeah. Because I mean, at the fundamental level, yeah, we're still going through the book and discussing themes and setting intentions in the same way that I would kind of approach any character and figuring out what they want and where they are in their journey. It's just more of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, what a gift too to follow that character's straight through their through line, playing every single one of their intentions until they eventually get what they want with very little interruption, really. So, I mean, in terms of kind of falling through a journey in the, 90 minutes that this play runs, I mean, going from moment to moment to moment, just each one builds on the next, and I think really just becomes a part of a very organic journey. So it's a completely new experience for me being, in a one woman show, but I think it's been really valuable and really interesting.
You know, I find it just such a beautiful time, during the WPA, what would be like 1935 to 43 somewhere. I think Roosevelt kindly ended it during the middle of World War II, but so much beautiful art was made. I mean, visual art and plays and things. It was just a really explosion of artistry and also public service. I mean, so much of Riverside State Park, a lot of that was the centerpiece of a lot of things that were built, the swinging bridge and all that during the WPA. I guess the question is, do you find the world that we live in now I think the people back then to me seem so super. I mean, when you read about these librarians on these horses that take books to people who don't know how to read the books to them, teach them how to read, do other things, wind up collecting like recipes and dress patterns, distributing those, being this connection to people that I just don't know. Are there, it's to me, I don't know how people today would even be able to see that couldn't have been people like that. You know, really, I just find that, it must have been when you did your dive into like the period and the people, was that something that you were kind of struck you with these folks?
I mean, I think we did talk about that a little bit in our kind of like weekly adventures, kind of out into the world to set intentions and talk about the script. We did talk about the sense of community and where do we get our community today, and how it was such a big change for Emma in this script to go from one community in her journey where she came from a religious background, had her husband, and to go through what she did and to like take a complete 180 and build an entirely new community out of her work with the Pack Horse Library, the people that she met along the way, and exactly like you said, the people that she taught to read, the people whose deathbeds she sat by, and the new lives that she experienced. It was an exercise, I think, for this character in rebuilding a life out of a new found community, which was so, it is so crucial and beautiful in the script.
Yeah.
I can see some parallels. You know, Pam was talking about finishing the script during the pandemic.
Oh, sure.
And how the way that we were gathering together was on Zoom calls to read scripts with each other, film and share our work with each other. And for her, she had a pretty rich writer's community during that time, which I actually envy. I think that that's so wonderful. And how neat that it parallels the story of what brings people together in community, even when you're in these far off remote places, but storytelling and sharing stories and the arts, it kind of calls us back together, because that's where we find our humanity and and connection. So that was interesting. The Works Progress Money, that was fascinating, because one of the little adventures Hazel was alluding to, we went on some horse adventures, met some horses. We went on a hike at Riverside State Park, and kind of just to get a feel of, you know, walking in that terrain, and there was these women that came by, of course, riding horses on the trail, and we're just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But the connection to the Works Progress Money, I didn't know that that was part of that. So how interesting, we still feel the ripple effects from that time.
Oh, forever.
That's really neat.
And I love when I see some of the paintings that were done during that time. Mm-hmm. Just amazing, you know, modern, really cool modern takes on landscapes and mm-hmm. things like that. And you'll see shows around that. 7 Mile, kind of a little bit, what would that be, further east, I guess, or further west. That was a camp. That's where the Works Administration folks, there was a actual, where they lived.
Oh, wow.
Out there, yeah. And there's actually placards and stuff out there. You can kind of see some of the old foundations of that. Yeah, it was just an amazing program back when we thought government should do things for people, right? So, and I think, you know, not to get political, but I think mm-hmm. that people can really find some solace in this story, where people are looking for solace right now. And mm-hmm. in a way, you know, you sit in a theater with a bunch of, and stage left is, Alana, how many seats in stage left?
60.
And there's not a bad seat in the house, and you sit there and everything is very intimate. And you are, it's a very cathartic experience, I think, to go there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Every production is going to just hit you right between the eyes. And this one's no different. This one is absolutely packs a punch.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's moving. It's lovely. Just lovely.
I would say, if you're looking for something, if you're still kind of reeling from the events of the last month, I would say going to a place where you see people risk in their performances and the music, the playing, the lighting, the design, everybody coming together to create art for you. It's a wonderful gift, and you should, I'm not here to preach about it, but I think you should think about doing a nice thing for yourself and in the company of other people. And I think the pandemic was bad for us in that regard, is that I sure like to be a solitary person. I like to work on my own projects by myself until I have to work with other people. So for me, you know, going to the theater is a way to step out with a bunch of people and sit there and experience something together.
It's one of those safe third spaces where we think of, we're at our home, we're at our work, but where can we be with other people in a safe third space and have that sense of community?
Yeah.
You know, I we were talking about the theater being our church, and there's a lot of themes of the religious, or, you know, religious spaces. And here we are in our church at the theater and sharing some fundamental truths that are very uplifting and encouraging. And that's great in this time, you know, when it's very dark outside as well. And we can feel very isolated. So to come together this important.
I think you're absolutely right about the church thing. I know when I walk into, and it's weird, it's almost like when you walk into an empty church, or at times when I was a firefighter, walking into my empty station, you know, maybe everybody was out on a call and I walked in, you know, and it's just like, there's something that is the intentionality of a place, and a place where we're going, where intentionally people are there to make art for you to enjoy. I just think that is the holiest of places that there can be, in my opinion. But, and speaking of which, if you'd like to visit this theater and see the show, how do people do that?
You can go to stagelefttheater.org. That's theater with an ER, and go to the tickets and events link, and that will take you to the tickets page, surprisingly.
Yeah, and we're going to come back. When we come back, I want to talk to Alana a little bit about how things are going in this regard and any surprises and things like that. So put your thinking cap on, and I'm going to cut to a little bit of music, and then we're going to come right back with some more stuff.
Smoky paths to lead back to a Scots old cutty sark. In the hills there are ways that are dark. There are ways in the mountains of losing all your sins. White lightning puts a bumbling in your head. If you fought your bone pop skull, it'll be your last remark. In the hills there are ways that are dark. There are ways that are dark as a leaf from the past. Ancient tones haunt the hollers and the coast. There are bones of the raven that flew from Noah's Ark. In the hills there are ways that are dark. In
Church Left Theater. Your radio station, KYRS, actively supports the diversity of the Spokane area, celebrating the many voices that make up our region. Our volunteer-run station hosts a variety of shows that feature otherwise unheard perspectives and opinions. In a sense, KYRS is working against institutional racism, sexism, homophobia, and other forms of oppression simply by existing in opposition to mainstream media. Please make a pledge today by texting GIVE KYRS to 44321. Your support keeps KYRS operating during a time when our community needs free and open media the most.
KYRS wants your brand new car! Well, not really. Yes, indeed, it's a great feeling to finally get another car after the old one's been breaking down over and over. It's another great feeling to get even more use out of an old car. Here's how. Donate it to KYRS. Car donors get a membership, a tax deduction, and the satisfaction of really helping out. Just call toll-free 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7227. Honk, honk!
Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. for Solidarity Spokane, the Inland Northwest's local labor hour, hosted by Cat Sabotage, elevating the voices of everyday workers and worker organizations, fighting for your rights in the workplace and fostering community solidarity. Join us here to reclaim control over your own destiny by reclaiming the conditions and products of your labor. That's Mondays at 4 p.m. here on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. An injury to one is an injury to all.
And welcome back, everybody. I am talking with my friends from Stage Left's production of Minister of Sorrow, not sour. We've been talking about the show, and it sounds like a very exciting and cool show. And like I was saying, maybe just the salve that you need for those wounds. But Alana, I want to talk to you about how are things going since you took the helm as the artistic director and managing director of Stage Left Theater.
Oh, it's going great. Yeah. I have Minister of Sorrow to thank. The show's been running on rails, knock on wood.
Yeah, that's a good way to start out your tenure, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But it's been going good. It's been going good. We're moving forward with next year's productions. We've got Ride the Cyclone coming up in February.
And that'll be a crowd pleaser, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's immensely popular with the younger audiences.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of which, this Minister of Sorrow, I had a mom ask me, because I was pushing the show the other day. Would it be okay to take my child to go see this? Is there, what do you think about age level? What, PG, PG-13?
I don't know. There's a couple of moments where some pretty adult content is described, and while we don't actually see some of the violence that is discussed, I think a PG-13 for sure.
Okay.
It would be it's definitely some mature themes in the show.
Right. Yeah, I would say it's squarely PG-13.
Okay, PG-13. Okay, that sounds good. So when any big surprises that, after Jeremy left, did you go, oh my gosh, I never thought about this running a theater?
Oh, every day's a new surprise.
Yeah?
Yeah, but mostly it's like, oh, what was the password for this account?
Oh yeah, right, right. And you've got such a great creative teammate with Moss there.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been a joy to work with Moss every day. And Jeremy's still around.
Yeah.
Yeah. He comes by. He was here today painting logs.
Oh, my gosh. Not the log that's the horse.
No, okay. That was Moss. But he was painting the logs on the house.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Wow. Yeah, so that's good. You get to see Jeremy a lot. And, yeah, well, I think Stage Left is grateful to have you, that's for sure.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
Yeah, and is it, so you must just be there like all the time, I would imagine, between having to do the lighting design for this and then, you know, just running theater stuff. I mean, there's so many nuts and bolts that people don't think about with the theater.
Oh, absolutely. Jeremy always used to say, oh boy, it's been, you know, so many months since I've taken a day off. And I'm like, oh, you must be exaggerating a little bit. And I've looked back at the calendar and I've been like, oh, it's been like 3.5 weeks since I've taken a day off.
Wow.
Yeah, it adds up. And the beautiful thing, though, is I don't notice.
Well, you're having fun.
Yeah. I was going to say earlier when we were talking about theater being a third place and a salve for these troubled times, I'm really blessed to be able to come into Stage Left as my job.
Yeah.
Because it's just a joy. It's a joy to do what I do.
Yeah, that's so cool. But you also have, a lot of like lighting design. You have like a real big background and are really a leader in the industry in that too.
I wouldn't say that necessarily, but
are you a follower in the industry? Whatever.
No, I mean, but you know, I'm known in some pockets.
Yeah, well, and maybe some people don't know, but you designed the whole New Year's Eve ball drop thing in Times Square, right?
True. Technically, I was the assistant designer, but I did do all the programming for it, and I've done the maintenance programming for the last 17 years.
So when you say programming, is it actual like computer code programming, or is it just like a lighting board programming, or what?
It's kind of a combination of both.
Okay.
It's there's a PC-based software that's closer to console programming, and then within that there's a scripting language that allows me to do more advanced functions.
Okay. What is the name of that language? I'm just curious.
Well, it's based on C++.
Oh, C++. Okay. Yeah. So that's that's pretty common.
Yeah. And luckily I had some background in C++. I took a class in college. And yeah. I was able to pull that out of my brain and make it work.
You know, it's so funny. When I would, I was originally a computer science and math major in college because computer science was so new. You couldn't be a computer science major. They were combined. And the languages at the time were BASIC, Fortran, and Pascal. Those were the, and then reverse polar notations. That was it. So all this other stuff didn't exist. But for those of you keeping score at home, that's a little little tidbit there. So let's tell people one more time how they can come and see Minister of Sorrow.
You go to stageleftheater.org. That's theater with an ER, and go to the tickets and events link. And that'll take you to On the Stage, and you can buy your tickets there. If you're super old school, you can call 509-838-9727.
Very good.
And I'll do it for you.
Okay. Oh, very nice. Anything else you guys want to add about this show before we go?
You know, as the director, I just really do want to give Hazel full credit for the work that she's put in. Usually it's a 6-week process. We cast this in August. So she has been working on this for many, many months. And I think if you are on the fence about coming, come and support the work that she's been doing, but also just be lifted by her work, because I know I have been. Get a little teary, but like I have been every time we've had a rehearsal or a meeting. It's lovely work, and I'm very grateful to her for her time.
Thank you. No, this is, I mean, all the time and effort, it's just been wonderful from start to finish. So yeah, I really do hope that people come out and enjoy this. It's been just a wonderful process putting it together with such a great team of people. Yeah. Like, what a different experience to just walk into a rehearsal room where there's maybe five people on any given night, but like just some wonderful hearts and souls in that space who have put everything into it. Sarah and Joey and our team.
Gabe, oh, yeah. Matt Pope. Yeah, Matt Pope, my assistant director. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So. And Gabe, our stage manager, who's just wonderful and takes such good care of us. So it's stage left, and this production team has just been a wonderfully safe environment to explore and try new things and create, and it's been wonderful, and I think people will see that.
All right. Well, thanks, you guys. Thanks for coming along, and I appreciate it. And everyone, just by the way, you are listening to KYRS Medical Lake, Spokane, 88.1, 92.3 FM.
Head now to Eden, yea, brother. Head now to Eden. No more trouble in my body. Like a king on whatever I find. Eat all the fruit and throw away the rind. Yay, brother, yay.
Think about when you'll die by. Fall in my head, it floods what you said into the room babe. I don't belong in the desert, yes I can see it, take me home babe. Sad again, this place.
Social media has been lighting up like fireworks, with a myriad of Trump voters exclaiming, "I didn't know he meant me." For example, many MAGA cheerleaders are now shocked to learn that his rallying cry to eliminate Obamacare means killing the popular Affordable Care Act that provides their health coverage. Perhaps the most stunned, though, are many Trumpers who had cheered his anti-immigrant send them back where they came from tirades. They assumed he only meant the murderers, rapists, and cat eaters he frantically warned about. Not their own son's wonderful Honduran wife, not the beloved family running the popular Mexican cafe in town, and surely not their hard-working landscaping crew. Just the bad immigrants, right? Wrong. Trump says he'll declare a national emergency, ordering America's military to conduct a mass roundup and deportation operation, including police agencies making workplace raids and neighborhood sweeps. They even expect they'll make, quote, collateral arrests of U.S. citizens. Surely, you might think, such indiscriminate, un-American mass incarceration can't really happen here. But Trump is already putting thuggish right-wing enforcers in place to make it happen. Moreover, a network of Trump's big corporate funders is gleefully rushing to cash in on this new capture-and-jail industry. Meet GEO Group, a multi-billion-dollar private penitentiary conglomerate that has been a profiteering house of horrors for inmates and workers across the country. but his top executives were huge donors to Trump's ascension, and they now tell Wall Street investors they expect to gain $400 million a year in new business incarcerating Trump's immigration suspects. This is Jim Hightower saying there's a name for a government based on xenophobia, demagoguery, and greed. Cacistocracy. Government by the worst persons in society. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 or 92.3 FM.